So in preparation for Matan Torah, what do we learn from Parshas Bechukosai? I mean, there are many things that we learn, but one particular point that we have to make at the outset is that it's not coincidental that we read Parshas Bechukosai before Shavuos, and this is a sugi at the end of Masechta Megillah, and the Gemara establishes that the calendar has to work out guaranteeing that Parshas Bechukosai will be read before Chag HaShavuos. In Chutz Laaretz, where they're lagging behind by a week, they'll still catch up, at least as far as Bechukosai is concerned, before Chag HaShavuos. And the Gemara explains, which is very complicated, why it's so critical to read Parshas Bechukosai before Shavuos. And in fact, the Gemara itself makes a parallel between reading Parshas Bechukosai before Shavuos and reading the Parsha of the Klolos before Rosh Hashanah. And that Parsha of the Klolos is in Ki Tovo in Sefer Dvarim. Now we're up to Shavuos and we're reading Sefer Vayikra. We're finishing up Sefer Vayikra. And there too we have to finish up the Klolos before Shavuos. So the Gemara says, well, wait a minute. What is this concept? You want to get rid of all the Klolos on last year's Cheshbon and start a new year? That makes sense with regard to Rosh Hashanah. It doesn't make sense with regard to Shavuos. So why are you pressing Bechukosai, the Klolos, before Shavuos? And the Gemara establishes, which is a big of a pella, that even Chag HaShavuos is a Rosh Hashanah, because there's a judgment for Peros HaIlon, for the fruits of the trees, on Chag HaShavuos. So that gives Chag HaShavuos almost the status of a holiday of judgment, and therefore we have to get rid of the Klolos. We want to make sure that with Chag HaShavuos we'll be judged favorably. That's what the pasuk says, "V'nasati lchem es gishmachem." You'll have rains coming down, v'aretz titein pirya, and the land will produce its fruit. All this is because we read Bechukosai before we entered into Chag HaShavuos. So this was the takana that the Gemara codifies at the end of Masechta Megillah in the name of Ezra. You know, Ezra was in charge of the Kriyas HaTorah for the whole year round, and that's what he wanted to guarantee. What we would like to study in this essay is perhaps there's another reason, more of a philosophical reason that is inherent in the Parsha of Bechukosai, that perhaps Bechukosai has a lesson that teaches us something about Matan Torah, about Kabbalah Satorah. And we begin our analysis here, which you'll see on page 188, if you have it. It might be on this page, I don't know. In the second paragraph, this is a Gemara in Masechta Shabbos on Daf Lamed Gimel. You know, the Gemara of Matan Torah is in Masechta Shabbos in two different places. One is in Perek Bamim Adlikin, that's on Lamed Gimel, and the other is way later on Daf Pei Ches, all the Agadotas about Matan Torah. And in the Agadata about Matan Torah in Shabbos Lamed Gimel, the Gemara focuses our attention on a pasuk in Parshas Bechukosai. The pasuk says, "Veivesi alechem cherev." I will bring upon you a sword, and this is obviously a punishment for a certain crime. And the Gemara is going to identify that crime. And the pasuk continues by connecting the cherev to nekama for the bris, to so to speak, avenging the fact that we don't live up to our commitment in the bris. And the Gemara identifies that bris as the bris of Torah, of the study of Torah. And if a bittul Torah, if we're not careful about studying Torah, that could bring about, chas v'sholem, this terrible klola of cherev. Now, the fact that bris here refers to Torah, that the Gemara establishes, for example, the pasuk in Yirmiyahu Novi says, in lo brisi yom v'laylach u'koshamayim lo samti, that's a reference to Torah. And the Gemara establishes that the study of Torah is going to maintain the existence of the world. Chuko Shamayim Va'aretz. However, what is the word cherev here? How does that word cherev allude to or connect with Bittul Torah? That's not clear. The Gemara understands that the bris is the bris of Torah, but that the punishment for violating that bris of Torah should be cherev. Why is that so? And in order to understand that, we have to ask another question. The Gemara in Brachos, and this is back on your page 187 in the third paragraph. The Gemara has a pasuk to Darshan at the end of Sefer Dvarim. It says, Haskes Ushma Yisrael. And the Gemara takes that word Haskes and analyzes it in a figurative way, figuratively, not literally, because Haskes really means to pay attention. And the Gemara says, if you take apart that word into its component parts, it has something called a kat. You know, the last two letters in that word is chaf, tuf. And the Gemara darshins, asu kitos, kitos. To create little groups. Now, you and I might think and associate with a kind of group something negative, pejorative. You know, very often, you know,
kat as a cult.
Yeah, like a cult, or for example, you find that at Yam Suf there were various kitos that were arguing one with the other. So sometimes when you divide up the people into little kitos, little groups, it indicates a kind of competition or even a contention between different groups. Here, Adarabba, the Torah, the way the Gemara defines it, is advocating creating these groups. What are these groups? These groups are dedicated lasok b'Torah. I don't know if in college you had seminars. You know, in graduate school it's even more common that you have seminars in which groups of people actually learn together. And this dates back to the Torah itself. I mean, it's not something new. It's no longer the lecture where just the Rebbe gets up and teaches, or Lahavdil in the university where a professor gets up and just lectures. It's now kitos kitos. They're groups. Seminar groups, that's what I call them. What's the emphasis on the seminar groups, as we call them? Lefisha eina Torah nikneis ela b'chabura. That ultimately, in its perfect state, ideally, Torah should be studied in groups. Now, many of us feel, I can study Torah on my own, and I can do that privately. I don't need groups. I may need study aids, you know, different books and texts and so forth. Like a person who goes to, you know, takes upon himself to learn Daf Yomi. So he buys himself art scroll, right? He learns Daf Yomi on his own. Many people go to groups and shiurim on Daf Yomi. But let's say a person just didn't work out in his schedule, so he buys art scroll. And he feels very confident and very comfortable learning by himself. Here the Gemara is advocating, no, to learn in groups. Now you might think, well, that's just the cherry on the top. You know, it embellishes your Torah study. It's not essential to Torah study. It's a nice thing, because if you have groups, you know, there'll be debates and dialogues. No. The Gemara quotes Rabbi Yossi. What did Rabbi Yossi say? My dichsiv, a pasuk in Yirmi. You know, Yirmi is known for his very harsh castigation. Cherev al abadim v'no alu. Again, the word cherev here, that's the key secret word here. Cherev al soneim shel talmidei chachamim. Of course, soneim is just a euphemism. She yoshvim bad bebad. You know, there's a Talmud Chacham sitting here and studying Torah. There's a Talmud Chacham sitting here, but they never get together. They never communicate or have a dialogue. And he says, in that case, is cherev al abadim. Badim are like individual branches. So you have this stem, but it's got branches, and the branches are not overlapping at all. And the punishment here is cherev. We're not just talking about embellishing the study of Torah. We're not just adding another element that would beautify your Torah study, inspire it. A zekeli v'enveyu kind of thing. No. It's cherev. V'lo odin furthermore el shem mitapshim. Mitapshim means that they come up with erroneous ideas. They actually deviate from the understanding of the Torah. And they make the Torah, I think you'd say in Yiddish, krum. Krum means when you bend it out of shape. And that's what the Gemara says in Tainis, that Rava declares, O chavrusa o mesusa. You know, either give me a partner to learn with, or give me death. So you and I would have thought that, okay, let's learn in groups, and that's very good. You know, we will embellish our learning. You have your opinion, I have my opinion, and that develops it. I know some of the people here learned Makkos with me, and we had some lively discussions, if you remember the good old days. And that's wonderful. You know, that could add to your schar for the mitzvah. But here the Torah is saying something totally different. It's not just telling you that, you know, you could be a Talmud Chacham by studying on your own. You could be even a greater Talmud Chacham if you study in groups. No. The Gemara is absolutely demanding, requiring that the Torah be studied in groups. And he wants to understand, a person is sweating it out, he's putting in a great deal of energy, he's learning alone. Okay, I could say that maybe he doesn't deserve the highest rank, but why do you tell him that he's going to get such a punishment of cheref? I mean, that's unbelievable. So if you turn to page 188 in this Maimar, and after he asks his second question, Elamitapshim, you know, that the Torah itself is being taken out of shape and misunderstood. Why? Because it's being studied by Yechidus. Why is that so? Why are you being mafsi the Torah itself? You're losing foregoing the Torah itself. Lamani Gara, why should it be so harsh? So he tells the story that the Gemara tells in that same Agadat in Shabbos about the ger who comes in front of Shammai. He says, teach me the Torah when I'm standing on one foot. Shammai throws him away. And Hillel teaches him, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. Ma'ida soni alecha, ma'ida alecha soni l'chavrcha lo savet. What's despicable for yourself, you wouldn't want it for yourself, don't do to your friend. And that's called Torah. Kula idach pirusho zil Gemara. Now, we understand intuitively, as a moral rule, that alecha sani, that which is unacceptable for you, you don't want others to do it to you, you shouldn't do it to others. Fine. That's in Bein Adam Lechavera. But zu kala Torah kula? Why is that called kala Torah kula? What about lulav? What about tzitzis? What about tefillin? I mean, what about all the mitzvahs bein adam l'makom? That's also part of the Torah. What does that have to do with v'ahavta l'reich kamocha? Rabbi Akiva is famous for teaching the principle of the Torah, v'ahavta l'reich kamocha, zeh klal gadol b'torah. And it sounds like zeh klal b'torah, the way Hill said it to that ger, is that it incorporates and encompasses the entire Torah. Why? Why is v'ahavta l'reich kamocha encompass the entire Torah? So here he quotes a Medrash Rabbah, the name of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Right, we just commemorated the Hilula, Yom HaDilula of Rashbi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu demanded of Moshe Rabbeinu before the giving of the Torah, LaHakel Asa'am, to gather together the people. And not only that, the Torah had to be given to the entire community of Israel. Shishim Ribui. Lo yichaser af echad. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, let not one soul be absent. Then and only then would the Torah be given. It's an all or nothing proposition. Now, why is that so important? That every last Jew be there. Let's say one Jew couldn't come. He was pressured. Therefore, the whole of Klal Yisrael has to forego on Kabbalah HaTorah. What is the significance of that particular individual who is missing at Kabbalah HaTorah? And now on page 189, he comes back to the statement of Hillel, Maido lecha sani lechavrcha lo sa'avit. He says, as a moral principle, intuitively, it's logical, it's rational, we relate to it. But yet, even though we all, you know, we're all on board, and we're all saying, yeah, I accept what you're saying, don't do to others what you don't want others to do to you. But yet, lamaisa, on a daily basis, people don't really live up to that demand, up to that, by that creed, I guess you would say. And it's too frequent that people do to others what they wouldn't want others to do to themselves. And why is that so? And the answer is simple. Man is egotistical, what we call anochiyut. He cares about himself. Adam karov etzel atzmo. A person wants others to be very forgiving of him. That's called salchani. But when it comes to others, He's not willing to give them that extra rope. And this midah of caring for myself is actually in and of itself a great gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu planted within us this desire to want the best for ourselves, to want to achieve, to want to be motivated, so that egoism, egotistical people are very successful, and there's something good about that. But he says the following. This is the paragraph that starts Avol, and he says, Lamrot shezu matana, even though this is a gift, every gift, you have to know how to use it. Hare yachol adam lekabel, a person could receive, Me'a Melech, from the king himself, a great gift. He gives an example of a chair that's made of gold. But what does the man do with that gift? He brings it to a state of filth. He dirties it. He soils it. He gets up on the chair with his mud-ridden sneakers and so forth and so on. He wants to get up on a higher place. He says that on the one hand, egoism is a good gift, and it's meant to be makadem a person, lidarbenoto, you know, to give him that extra motivation to fulfill his tafkid in life. But nevertheless, man has too often a pull, a gravitational pull, to misuse and abuse this gift. Rabbi Akiva tells us that although you can use that gift of egoism, chayecha kodmin l'chay chavercha, in certain situations you come first. But on the other side, Rabbi Akiva says you got to balance that principle of chayecha kodmin with the principle of yahavta l'reach kamocha. Don't allow your egotistical tendency to draw you to the other extreme. Find a balance between the two. On the one hand, caring about yourself and trying to project yourself. On the other hand, caring about the next one and making sure that his sensitivities are taken into consideration, his needs are addressed. He gives the example of three people that each one functions in a different way, has a different job, and they work together to establish a factory. He's got the mahandes, he's got the architect, he's got the money man who's putting in the money. Everyone contributes his chelek.
Founders.
What do you say?
Different founders.
Founders?
Yeah.
Founders. Different founders. It sounds like glide already. I don't know. He says, Baal HaMamon, the person who has money in his pocket, in his bank account, he's going to invest that money. The architect, on the other hand, builds the plans for the factory. The mahandes, the engineer, is necessary to make sure that everything in the plans is implemented. All the plans come to fruition. But everyone has to recognize, on the one in his place, how he is contributing, but at the same time, he has to respect and evaluate the other person. And therefore, if they work together as one entity, as one organism, that's going to be a successful project. He says, Im HaMahandes Choshev SheHu, he's the most important, or the architect feels that way, it's not going to go. The engineer has to respect the architect and understand and recognize his contribution, and the same way around. Im echad yitarev l'shnei achlatot, ha'esek yikros. You know, you stick to your area of expertise, make those decisions, and let him do his. Otherwise, the whole project is going to fall apart. It's going to collapse. Ha'esek mitafkede teiv, when does the company work at full capacity and everything clicks? Kasher kol echad mimalei funkcia nifredet, each one is fulfilling his job. But as important as each function is, he recognizes the contribution of the other person. And this is true with regard to Klal Yisrael. Now we get to the Nimshal. Every single Jew in Klal Yisrael has a special contribution to make. There's no one who's here just in vain. Each Jew has to understand that he has a particular responsibility and a role to play within the context of the Klal, the collective unit of Am Yisrael. And now I want you to turn to, if you can, to page 190. And he gives another mashal from a symphony orchestra. In the symphony orchestra, there are various players on different instruments, and each one has a unique contribution to make. The sound that comes from the entire orchestra is a combination, integration of all the different sounds of the individuals. He calls them the Shiva Tavim, you know, the seven, what they're called, notes. The seven notes. And he goes through different kinds of instruments and so forth and so on. He says the same thing happens with Klal Yisrael, Kodesh Baruch, who knows how to weave, how to create Klal Yisrael into a whole, into an organism. And each person has his own contribution. That contribution has to do with his natural propensities, the way he was born, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestowed him. It also has to do with the way he was raised by his family, his parents, be'ez chevra uchai, in what society he lives, what experiences in life he had. Everyone is different. Kol Adam shone b'tachlit ha-shinui mi-chaviro. Each person is unique, and no two people are identical. Kishem she'en partzufeyim, just like faces are not exactly identical. Everyone has their own miyuchadut. I love that word. Their own singular biladiyut. Their exclusive role to play within the Yetzirah, within the creation that's called man. And God gives every individual the ability and the responsibility to fulfill his tafkid in this world. There's no one else who can replace him. That's the yisod that underlies the laws of Avelus. Why are we mourning so much for the loss of someone? Because that person cannot be replaced. He's gone. He's part of the collective whole, but he's also an individual that contributes in his own way. That's what Chazal mean when they say that Torah was given. Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, Rashi says the name of the Medrash, Ki Ish Echad Belev Echad. What is that unity that's inherent and a prerequisite in the giving of the Torah, Kabbalas HaTorah? It's the Achdus of Kol Echad Yisrael, every person recognizing his place and understanding and appreciating that it cannot go on without him. Every individual Jew has a role to play, and it's an important role. No one could fulfill his role and replace him. It's just like that case in the factory where we had the engineer and the architect and the person who invested the money. And now from that understanding of Klal Yisrael and Kabbalas HaTorah, we come down to the level of Limud HaTorah. How do I study Torah? He says the following. In a secular world, Lahavdil, a person could study the laws of science and he could excel and he could understand and possess a great deal of knowledge. That works according to the natural law of universe. He says, but when it comes to the study of Torah, there's a whole different set of rules and regulations that operate here. It's different than any of the other disciplines or chachmos, the wisdoms of man. And the proof of it is that the Torah is endless, he says. Who could actually expect or even dream about the possibility of knowing all the Torah? Forget about Tanakh, which is 24 books. Forget about Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, which is complicated in itself. And then add the Talmud Bavli, all of Shas. Then add the Rambam's and the Arba Chelkei Shulchan Aruch. And this is just the basic knowledge of Torah. He says every Jew is commanded to try to understand the entire Torah, to learn it all, and to remember it. Is that possible, he says? According to the laws of nature, it makes no sense. It's beyond human comprehension to even dream about the possibility that someone could, in a comprehensive way, be makif all the Torah, remember it all. And yet, paradoxically, we see that there are Talmidei Chachamim who fill the definition, the requirement of a Talmud Chacham, as Rabbi Yochanan formulated it in Shabbos Taf Kuf Yudalad. Ezi Talmud Chacham. What is a Talmud Chacham? Who qualifies for that name, for that status? Kol Shesholim Oso Halacha Bechol Makom. It's unbelievable. You can ask him a question in Kudshim, in the most complicated laws of Pigul and Nosar. Or you can ask him in Zerayim. The Omer, he doesn't hesitate. He gives you an answer on the spot. Afilu Masech Tekala, he even understands the bride. That's complicated. He says, in contrast, with regard to other branches of human knowledge that are very limited, he says, take for example, a surgeon who's really achieved tremendous reputation as the, you know, he's the expert in his surgery. He went to high school, he went to university, he took hashlamot, you know, he did his what do they call it, post, you know, postdoc. And ask him when he comes to the into the surgical operating room, how much of that knowledge, which he was tested on and he excelled on, you know, he was an A plus student, how much does he really take to the, you know, take to the table, you know, literally the table on which he operates? He says he's a professor dagul, he's shame olami. What does he remember? How much does he actually remember from all those years and years of knowledge? He was tested. And here he makes a cynical comment on the top of 191. He says, 5 minutes after he was tested, he forgets half the material that he studied. Chatzi me'achom parach mirosho. How can you possibly expect a human being to remember all that? I remember anatomy. I didn't take anatomy, but those who took anatomy would cram it in for the exam. They had to know exactly, you know, the names of each bone and which was connected. And then they walk out of the test room and ask me a question, and that's it. They blank out. I once took a course in graduate school in phenomenology. The professor who came from France to teach in the United States, he was very kind to us. He let us photocopy his notes. He had 250 pages of typewritten notes. I locked myself up in a room for a month, literally a month, in order to memorize this because I knew I was going to fail. I got a B plus in the course. Ask me a day later what I studied there. It was gone. He says, The old knowledge that the brain accumulated is gone. The new knowledge takes its place, and it's more the relevant knowledge that takes its place. That's as far as yidiyah b'chlal, but when it comes to Torah, and the Torah commands us not just to study the Torah, but to remember the Torah, we're enjoined from forgetting the Torah. And Eina Kodesh Baruch Hu Ba Vitronya Im Abrios, he says, God will not, you know, punish us if we forget, because we're human beings. Lo Nitna Torah L'Malachi Ashores. And yet, despite it all, even after the Torah is very lenient and sort of tamed, it takes a step back, nevertheless, and this is the paragraph that starts in Nosaf, Hikarnu Gdola Yisrael. We've recognized grace that he gave. They reach, they attain this level of a Talmud Chacham Sholem Oso B'chol Makom V'Odeh LaHashiv. You can ask him anywhere, and they know how to answer. In the previous generation, there was the Chafetz Chaim, there was the Chazon Ish, there was the Ger Rebbe. He comes from that lineage. He says, even in our generation, there's the Rebbe Mitzchabin, Rebbe Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rebbe Moshe Feinstein, V'od, V'od. He says, these are Gedolei Yisrael that have somehow, magically, successfully understood the entire Torah. They're Makif Kol Mikzos HaTorah, and you can ask them anywhere. I remember I was in Shir Rav Salvation Shir, and we got up to a Sugyan Olos, you know, about Tumas Mess, and the Rav said, I'm a little bit rusty in Olos. I haven't studied this since I learned with my father as a child. And then he had to reorient himself. But imagine a child learning Olos at the deepest level. Reb Chaim, 60%, I think, of his Sfarim, of his Sefer, excuse me, on the Rambam, is dedicated to Tumas Mess. That's how they learned it, the Eun. Who today knows Tumas Mess? But yet there are scholars who can do that. How is it possible? And the answer is Hatshuvahi, that the Torah is not studied and Torah knowledge is not acquired in a natural way like other studies. There's some sort of school of power. He says, I once met a professor of Talmud who was a kofar. He didn't believe in the Torah at all. He was a professor of Talmud. He was a genius. He was very sharp. And yet, if you tested him on his knowledge of Talmud, he didn't come to the toenails of the Talmidei Chachamim of that generation, the Chachamim. And why is that? Because he studies Torah like another discipline, like science or like law, without any Yirah Shamayim. So he forfeits that koach, that power of skula, that is metaphysical, that's supernatural, that allows a person, facilitates his ability to be kona kol Torah kula. He's dealing with the Torah on a natural level as knowledge. He's not nisugal la'kif kamut adira shazuk shom omer Rebbe harvei Torah lamadati mirabosai. I studied a great deal of Torah for my Rebbeim. U'mechaverai, I am with my friends Yosem, and Talmida Yosem Mikula. The Torah that I know the best is the Torah that I learned from my Talmid. What does this mean? It makes no sense. Why? If Rabbi Yehuda Anasi taught Torah, it was based on the Torah that was transmitted to him from his giants, from his great Rebbeim. Why is he saying that there's so much emphasis on what he learned from his Talmidim? And the answer is, there's something very profound here in the statement of Rebbe. The way that Torah is acquired is a different way. It's got its own system, its own rules and regulations. Bechabura. What does that mean, Bechabura? The way the Torah was given at Har Sinai. Kol echad v'echad mi'am Yisrael. Every single member of the Jewish people has something to give, something to contribute in the learning experience. You're not alone. You're part of a greater whole. Even if you'll try to understand something very difficult, a young student will come along and will ask you a question, and all of a sudden, the Rebbe, who's a great giant in Torah with decades and decades of experience that supersede beyond that of this young Talmud, and yet all of a sudden he realizes that the Talmud asked him a question that he never thought about. And he's absolutely amazed. I remember my Rebbe once yelled at a guy, berated him for asking a question. He said, "No, we already answered that question." And then the shiur ended, and Rav Soloveitchik started thinking. He put his head down on his arms, and he got up, and he yelled out in Yiddish, "Er ist gerecht, he's correct. Where is he?" So they told him that maybe you'll find him in the lunchroom. So he went all the way to what we used to call the greasy spoon across the street from the main base medrash. And he comes running to the guy, and the guy turns white. He doesn't know why Rav Soloveitchik gave him. Oh no, he's again going to give it to me in Tapas Tap. He says, "You were right and I was wrong, and I'll explain tomorrow." He says, that's what it means when Rebbe says, Yoser Mikula. Then again, there's a lot you can learn on your own, and there's a lot you can learn from your Rebbeim, and how much more so from Dibuk Chaverim. And even more than that is Mi Talmid Tzair, from your Talmidim. This is all part of the school of Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us heavenly powers to understand the Torah, to be makif the Torah, to create new chidushim and new insights. God is the creator, and he gave us the rules and regulations. He told us how we can experience this yitzirah mufla'ah, which is Torah, this unbelievable creative, intellectual, creative, endless Torah. And the answer is, we have to do it with a sense of humility, of anova, of yira, of shiflus, of dibuk chaverim, to learn together with others, bad bebad. This is a precondition of Limud Torah. Without that, the machinery just won't work. It's going to fall apart. We have to understand that this is the way the Torah is given, and this is the way the Torah is achieved. So what's so terrible, we asked, about a Talmud Chacham who learns alone? Madua, why is the Torah so chomer with him? Chachom efligu, he's going to get the punishment of a cherev, chas v'sholom. Why? And metapshim, they're saying stupidities. Lo matzlichim ligdol b'limud, they cannot grow and become giants in Torah. And the answer is because limud haTorah is a process that's shamaymi. It's heavenly, it's divine, it works by a different system, v'lo artsi. It's not like studying the other disciplines. Dibuch haverim, these are not just words. These are not just, encouraging. Let's recommend this. This is a tnai bal yavar. This is a precondition. Without this, there's no possibility of hasogas haTorah, to create and to achieve in Torah. And therefore, the lashon cherev, he says, a very harsh word, comes from the lashon churban. What does it mean? Why churban? Destruction, desolation. Kol limud haTorah koreis. All the Torah study that you've achieved can fall apart and collapse in front of your eyes because we didn't live by the rules. Again, the old mashal, if I manufacture a washing machine, I give you klalei hora'ah, together with the washing, instructions how to use it. If you don't follow the instructions, you can break the whole machine, or at least you'll have to call a technician to help you out. He says the same thing applies here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us with the Torah the hora'ot, the instructions, the critical instructions that we must follow. And if we don't, metapshim, we're going to distort the Torah. HaTamid Chacham HaZeh Kvar Yigil Esegim, he already achieved great things, but he learns by himself, Yishkach Et Talmudo, he's going to forget his learning. He'll distort the Torah and he'll teach the Torah in a distorted way. He'll give even verdicts. He'll tell them, I paskin about this, that it's Tomei when it's really Torah, or vice versa. And Kol Zeh, what's the cause of all these mistakes that undermine the Torah and falsify it? It's because Choser Havana Miuchedet. He's not able to achieve that special understanding, that grasping of Torah. Shelachol Ish Yisraeli, to appreciate and recognize that every single Jew, Yeshlo Chashivut, he has a significance. He has something that he can contribute to learn from others. Mitalmida Yoser Mikulam. And we'll just wrap it up by mentioning that Rabbi Akiva, when he says Zeklal Gadol Batorah, what does he mean Zeklal Batorah? Batorah means in the study of Torah. And why is V'ahavtal Rechecha Kamocha so critical? Why do we find that when the Torah gave us the mitzvah of Hakel, or even before that, the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu is commanded to bring every single Jew out from the Ohel, mature people, young people, even a Yonek? It's because they all have to be there present to receive the Torah in this great Mamad Niska Venora. The Sinas HaTorah is to all of Klal Yisrael, to every single member of Klal Yisrael. And that's V'ahavta L'Reyecha Kamocha, to acknowledge and appreciate the significance of every single Jew. Anyone who you think, oh, he's not on that level, you know, he can't contribute anything. No, Gam Hu Yachol L'Trom, Gam Mimenu Ani Yachol L'Mod, Kol echad Yisrael chashuv, aim levater afilo al af echad, this a klal gadol b'Torah, meaning in limud Torah. And it's Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, he's the one who is going to teach this rule to us. In the last paragraph here on page 193, if you're following me, he says, the Gemara tells us a story that when Rabbi Shimon and his son Rabbi Loza came out of the cave, after 13 years, and they saw people who were planting and they were harvesting, and wherever they put their eyes, it burnt up. They didn't appreciate, they didn't recognize the significance of people who were planting and harvesting. Yatzasa baskol v'yomra lahachriv olami yatzasam. Again, the word churban, again, cherev. Chizru l'maraschem, go back into the ma'ara. And they went back into the cave, and they started learning again. And when they came out of the cave, Rav Shimon bar Yochai taught this medrash that we saw earlier, that was in the middle of page 190, based on the pasuk Haskesu Shema, Kol Yisrael Chayav Lios B'Matan Torah. Every Jew has to be there receiving the Torah. Charshim, those who plow, V'gam Zorin, those who plant, and also the Talmud Chacham. But it's not enough to help Talmud Chachamim. Is we need Rav Shimon bar Yochai, who apparently after getting the message from God that he's not doing the right thing and he had to go back into the morrow, when he came out the second time, he had a message. And the Gemara tells us at the conclusion of that story, Sharaz Zaken Echad, he saw an older person, Ratzim Shnei Adasim, he was running around on Erev Shabbos with two Adasim, and Rav Shimon asked him, why two? And he said, one keneged Zohar, one keneged Shomer. Rabbi Shimon told his son, Re'ei, kama chavivin mitzvos al am Yisrael. Look at the regular rank and file Jew. I don't want to use the word simple Jew because there's no poshut yid. And this Jew takes two adasim. He loves the mitzvos. He loves the Zohar. He loves the Shomer. It means kol echad v'echad Yisrael. This is the deeper meaning of Rav Shimon bar Yochai's teaching. Every Jew, whether he's a choresh, whether he's a kotzer, whether he's a sandal, a chayat, oshir, rosh, kulam b'liyotzim nekal chayom b'limud Torah, kulam kshurim l'limud Torah, they're all part of this endeavor, nechutzim l'klal Yisrael, they are necessary components that make up klal Yisrael, kidei lilmod uladas haTorah, even so that others would understand and learn the Torah. And therefore, if we're now standing before Chag HaShavuos, the Chag of Matan Torah, year in and year out, we have to annually learn this message, that for us to receive those kochos that our forefathers received at Har Sinai, we have to remember the chashivas, the significance of every single member of Klal Yisrael. No one could be missing. And if we're dedicated to that kind of achdus and appreciation for every Jew, then, and only then, can we be makabel the Torah, b'chedva, b'ava, b'resesu, b'yira, b'zeya, that the Torah will be chakuka b'libenu, it will be engraved in our hearts, lira es Hashem yisbarach kol hayomim asher onu chayim al pnei adomo, kei ratzon. Amen. Let's go back to Parshas Bahar and see if we can find a message in the Parsha of Avodim that could connect with Bechukosai. Very often we read both Bahar and Bechukosai in the same Shabbos. The Parsha of Avodim always bothered me. You know, it's not relevant to us really today, and the Torah is meant to be an eternal book. What message can we find, or what beauty can we find in the Parsha of the Avodim? So open up, if you will, to Vayikra Chaf Hei, and there's a unit of Psukim that starts on Lamed Tes, Pasuk Lamed Tes, Pasuk Mem Aleph, V'chi Yomach Achicha Imach V'Nimkar. We're talking about a person who fell, he collapsed financially, and he was sold as an Eved, Kisachir, Kisoshav. The Torah describes the way we treat him, Yeh Imach, then the Torah establishes that this Eved will go free with the Yovel. So Ajnas Hayovel Ya'avod Imach. And then it says Yotzim Imachu Bonav Imo. And when the Yovel comes, then he shall leave your domain, meaning he'll be free, he'll be an Eved that's freed, he and his sons with him. And if you look at Rashi, Rashi quotes the Gemara in Kiddushin Chav Beis. The Gemara is bothered, obviously. What do you mean his sons will go free? Who bonav imo? Amar Rabbi Shimon. Im hu nimkar bonav mi machron? Who sold his sons? That the Torah has to say that they go free with the when the father goes free? Ela mikan sherabo chayav bimizonos bino. That although the son is not an Eved, he was not sold as an Eved, only his father was sold as an Eved, yet the Torah's Mechadesh, and it's alluded here in this Pasuk, that the master is obligated to support not only the slave, the servant himself, but even his sons. Notice that Rashi quotes this in the name of Rabbi Shimon, and that's how it's quoted in the Gemara Kiddushin. Again, it's a little bit strange because Rashi doesn't always quote the name of the person, whether it's a Tana or a Mora that he's quoting. Or more often than not, Rashi will just quote sources from Chazal without a name. And Rashi generally mentions the name as a certain emphasis, perhaps to add substance to the comment. So in this context, we're not exactly sure why Rashi had to quote Rabbi Shimon by name. And actually, the Gemara in Kiddushin that Rashi makes reference to quotes a different statement, an additional statement of Rabbi Shimon. Now, in order to appreciate this additional statement of Shimon, and this is major for our understanding of the whole framework of Avdus, we have to realize that the Parsha of Avodim appears not only here at the end of Vayikra, but the original Parsha, if you will, is in Sefer Shmos in Parshas Mishpatim, and there it says, in Baal Ishahu, and it says, V'yotza Ishto. And Rabbi Shimon, who we saw before in reference to our parasha here in Vayikra, is quoted with an additional and very similar comment attached to this pasuk in Mishpatim, in Baal Ishahu V'yotza Imo. So Rabbi Shimon says, "Imhu nimkar ishto mi nimkara." What does this pasuk tell me? That the wife goes free. Who sold the wife? Mikan sherabo chay bimizonos ishto. Once again, this is meant to teach us, we derive the conclusion that the master, the Adon, is chayev in parnosa and mazonos, not only of the slave himself, the Eved, but also to the slave's wife. Now, this second comment of Reb Shimon in the Gemara in Kiddushin also appears in the Mechilta. There the Mechilta attributes this statement to Rabbi Yitzchak. And there are slight variations between the version of the Mechilta and the version of the Shas Bavli. But it's interesting that Rashi in Parshas Mishpatim, instead of quoting Rav Shimon with regard to Ishto, the wife of the slave, and the chiyuv of the Adon to support the wife of the slave, as a statement in the name of Rav Shimon, Rashi prefers to quote Rabbi Yitzchak as Rabbi Yitzchak is quoted in the Mechilta. So in Parshas Mishpatim, which dedicates a large chunk of the parsha to the laws that pertain to Avodim, to an Eved Ivri, Rashi there quotes the Mechilta, quotes Rabbi Yitzchak, and he says, V'chimi hechnisa. It's a slight variation. If you compare the Gemara quoting Rav Shimon in Kiddushin Chaf Beis to the Mechilta quoting Rabbi Yitzchak, whereas Rabbi Shimon in the Gemara said Imhu Nimkar Ishto Mi Nimkara, here in the Mechilta in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak it says V'chi Mi Hechnisa, like who brought her in, so to speak, Shetetze, so that she should go out. Elamagida kosuv shakone evid ivri chayev v'mizonos ishto. So it's very strange that Rashi in his Pirush al Torah in our Parshin Bahar quotes Rabbi Shimon. Rashi in his Pirush al Torah in Parshas Mishpatim, instead of quoting Rabbi Shimon in the Sugya and Kiddushin, he decides that he would rather quote Rabbi Yitzchak in the Mechilta. Perhaps Rashi found that the version of the Mechilta, Miach Nisa, is more on target. You know, it conveys a message here that's very significant, Miach Nisa. Now, again, I'm not sure we understand the difference between Mi Nimkara, with regard to Ishto, and Miach Nisa. But not only that, we have to see that these two parshios, when we compare and contrast them, Mishpatim on the one hand and Bahar on the other, we notice that with regard to the psukim in Mishpatim, which speak also address the issue of freeing a slave at the end of his 6-year term, and the Torah in Parshas Mishpatim mentions nothing about Yovel, here, with regard to Parshas Bahar and the obligation of the master to support the children of the slave, culminates with Yovel. And that Yovel cuts into the 6-year period of time. Meaning, if he was sold as an Eved because of his financial collapse, a year, 2 years, 3 years before the Yovel, he goes free within the 6-year framework, within the 6-year term of Avdus. Again, in both cases, whether we take Mishpatim or we take Bahar, the master, the Adon, is obligated to free both the slave himself and the wife of the slave and the children of the slave. And yet for some reason, Reb Shimon, in the Gemara Kiddushin, derives these halachos from two different psukim. So why did the Torah separate, according to Reb Shimon, the issue of the children, which is in Parshas Bahar, from the issue of the wife, which is in Parshas Mishpatim? Why that split? Since in both cases, the Torah is really telling us that the slave is freed, and together with the freedom of the slave, there's freedom of the wife and the children, which means the master, in this case, no longer has to support the slave's wife or the slave's children. Why was that separated into two parshios? And the answer to this is that the two parshiyos are talking or addressing two different circumstances, two different, fundamentally different scenarios or conditions. The halachos that are formulated here in Parshas Bahar by the Torah, opening up in its introduction with the words "Ki yomach achicha imach," if your brother is collapsing financially, he's impoverished. We're talking about the case of a slave who sold himself into slavery. He was in very dire needs financially, and in order to keep himself going afloat without collapsing under these difficult financial situation, the Eved was compelled to sell himself into slavery. Parshas Mishpatim, in contrast, is talking about a person who was sold, ki tikna eved ivri, says the Gemara, tikna miyad bezdin. He was sold as an eved ivri by the courts, by bezdin, against his will. He didn't just sell himself. And why did bezdin impose upon him this shall we call, situation of avdus, of slavery? The answer is because we're talking about a thief. He stole a certain sum of money. We'll soon see exactly how much that money is, but he stole a certain sum of money. He's unable to repay this gneva. And the kitikne here in Parshas Mishpatim is miyad bezdin shemachru b'gnevaso. He was sold by the bezdin to repay his debt of the theft. So there's a radically different, shall we say, paradigms here between Parshas Bahar that we're learning now and Parshas Mishpatim back in Sefer Shmos, paradigms of slavery. Two, shall we call it, fundamentally different identities or essences, ishiyut, of slavery. And of course, these are based on two different circumstances that brought them to be sold as avodah. In Parshas Mishpatim, we're talking about a thief. Im ein lo v'nimkar b'gnei vaso, the Torah says. That's Shmos Chav Beis, Pasuk Beis. Im ein lo v'nimkar b'gnei vaso. We're talking about a thief. Now, how much did he steal? So if you open up the Rambam in Hilchas Gneva, Perek Gimel, Halacha Yudal, you'll find an amazing conclusion. The Rambam says that he stole a value which is equivalent to 6 years of avdus. Now, that's an amazing amount of money. That's a humongous sum, because we're talking about an Eved who has to work for his Adon once he's sold, Yomam Valayla, 24/7. And, could you imagine what a person could earn, let's say the average worker, what would be his wages for working day and night, 7 days a week, 6 years in a row? And that's the amount of money that he stole, such that the work that he gives to the Adon for six full years is commensurate to the amount of money, the fortune that he stole. In other words, we're not talking about a petty thief, a pickpocketer. We're talking about a master thief who stole tremendous values, or maybe broke into a safe, tremendous cash assets. And therefore, we can call him perhaps a master thief, a world-class thief. And I would describe him not only as a thief, but as the Rebbe says, he's also a shlamaza. Why? Because where's the money that he stole? He squandered it away. I mean, he's now been caught and tried and condemned for his act of his criminal act of stealing, and he's got no money to pay back the theft. I mean, what a loser, we would say. And perhaps the picture that emerges from this analysis of the Eved of Parshas Mishpatim is that he's dysfunctional. He probably has tremendous worldly desires and he can't control them. He may have desires to use drugs, I don't know. He has no appreciation for the value of going out and working and supporting himself. He would rather prefer that people who earn money, their money should be taken away by this thief. And the truth is, let's think for a moment in a very compassionate way about the thief's wife. Consider the fact that this woman is married to a master thief, an arch criminal. The pasuk says, "V'yotza ishto imo," and probably it's a good assumption at the time that she married him, which is way before he was sold as an eved. He was not at that point a thief. I mean, why would she be interested in marrying a thief? And as a result of this crime, he, the Eved, who's the thief, the Ganav, doesn't consider the shame, the pain that his wife is experiencing, the embarrassment of the fact that her husband is being tried and condemned as a major thief. So we're talking about a person who probably started his career as a petty criminal, and it just avalanched. He became a major criminal, a thief of epic proportions, and he neglects his wife. He's totally insensitive to her feelings. These original features of thievery were not part of their relationship, and now look what's happening. This person is insensitive to his wife. He's self-centered. He's egotistical. He's short-sighted. He's dysfunctional. He's a shlamazel. He's got a whole list of milas tovas, so to speak, many shortcomings. So, what does the Torah do? Now, you would think that this criminal, this arch criminal, should be punished. Let's flog him down, you know, publicly, tar and feather him, and so forth and so on. That's not the way punishments of the Torah work. And this is the beauty of the Torah, and I want you to listen carefully. He says, the beauty of the Torah is that instead of making the offender and the criminal suffer punishment, but let's see if we can rehabilitate him, to get him to a point where he can rectify what he did, to correct his corruption, to understand what the source of his sin is, and educate him that if he corrects this terrible source of sin, this terrible corruption, he can come back and be integrated again into society. So what does the Torah do with this thief? He's sold as an eved into slavery, and now we want to elevate him from that lowly level of behavior to something more high. What caused him to be sold? Let him work day and night. Let him learn to appreciate the value of hard work, to earn his own keep, his own possessions, to respect that which is coming to him because he deserves it. And hopefully, at the end of this process, he will be ready to go out and find employment, get a job, support his family, don't prey on others. The Torah is concerned about the wife as well. She has to be supported. Why does she have to suffer because he's a thief? And therefore, we could say that the Torah's goal here is not just to have the master support the wife of this Eved for 6 years, but it's more than that. The Torah really is hoping to help this woman get out of this terrible situation that she finds herself. So the Torah says, you know what? Let this man, this thief, be exempt. Let's alleviate from his shoulders the responsibility of supporting his wife for 6 years. Let him work for his master day and night without earning any extra money. Let him learn to appreciate the ethical value and significance of hard work, so that after he goes out free, he'll be able to support his wife in a respectable manner. Save her from pain, from embarrassment down the line in the future. The Torah therefore teaches, V'yotza ishto imo. And what's the emphasis here with him, imo? When the master supports his wife, what he's really doing is he's helping her become free of all her anguish, of all its tsaras and her woes when her husband down the line is finally freed. That's why Rashi chooses the mechilta, the language of Rabbi Yitzchak. V'chimi hechnisa sheteitze. Who brought her in? And the answer is, this is a question directed to the thief himself, her husband. He has to ask himself the question, mi hechnisa? Who brought her into these troubles, into this humiliation, into her suffering and her embarrassment? He was neglectful, this slave. So in our parasha, if you ask, who's the subject of the parasha, and who's going to gain the most and benefit the most from all of this, all the details that the parasha, all the laws that the parasha is legislating, the answer is the slave himself and eventually his wife. But now look in Parashas Bahar. We're not talking about a slave who's a criminal, chas v'shalom. We're talking about a slave who sold himself into slavery voluntarily because of his financial hardship. Ones rachmana patre. He tried as best as he could to build up a business, to create a source of income, and he was unsuccessful. And financially it fell apart. The objective of the Torah here in Parashas Bahar is not to help the slave, paradoxically, but rather to help the master. In other words, the Torah's description of the Eved as ki yomach achicha, which means, as the Rambam says, the beginning of Hilchas Avodim, he has nothing. He has no land, he has no possessions to sell. He is absolutely impoverished. He's in an extremely destitute situation. He has no other possibility or no other recourse other to sell himself to avoid absolute starvation. Again, it could be that this situation of slavery, it's not so respectable, but nevertheless, it's not meant to bring shame to the family of the slave. A person in this situation is not to be blamed. Let him do this work, and that could be a tikkun for whatever averus he was guilty of. But the main thrust here is on the master. The subject, the theme in this type of slavery that's being addressed here is the master himself. And this we'll understand because of the words of the Alshech here in Parshas Bahar. He quotes a medrash from Tanchuma in Mishpatim, Omar David LaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lama Baras Aniyim, V'yoshav ha'olam b'shavol f'nei Elokim, V'heshiv LaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kein mi yinsar mitzvahs chesed, Utztaka im lo yu mekablim. David HaMelech was curious. He asked HaKadosh Baruch, why didn't you create poor people? Hashem answered, if not for them, there would be no one to receive the tzedakah. And who would uphold the values of kindness and charity? The Alshik explains that the true beneficiary of acts of chesed and tzedakah is the one who gives, the rich person, not the one who receives. In other words, the one who gives is able to fulfill the mitzvahs of kindness, of chesed, of charity and tzedakah. And this is what a wealthy person must keep in mind. Ultimately, the reason why poverty is there is for their benefit. The rich people, are really the cause of poverty. Because the only way that these rich people can receive the neshama, the tikkun that they need, is by helping the ani of the destitute. And therefore, the whole focus of our parasha, says the Alshech, Yomach Achicha Imach. What's the idea of Imach? Your brother is impoverished with you. With you means you, the rich master who's going to buy this slave. You understand that he's impoverished with him, that you too, although you're helping him monetarily, and you help, but really the poor man is helping you spiritually. And that's even more important than what you're helping him financially. And the entire parasha now in Bahar is very inspirational. Reb Shimon said, Imhu nimkar banav mi machron, who sold his sons. What does that mean? We're talking about an Eved Ivri who sells himself because of his financial straits. Now the question is directed not at the Eved himself. We have no questions, you know, and no complaints to target the Eved as we did in Parshas Mishpatim. There we targeted the Eved. Amiach Nisa, why did you bring your wife into such terrible straits? On the contrary, this question of him, who Nimkar Bonav Mimachron, is directed to the master who bought the slave. The master has to ask himself the following question. If it was his need for Tikkun, that HaKadosh Baruch wanted to give him and facilitate the opportunities of Chesed and Tzedakah, that's why the slave was sold. It's not the slave's fault. He's honest. He didn't cause his own selling into slavery. He did nothing of a pshia to deserve this. So then why should the children of the slave, who are entirely guilty, suffer the embarrassment of begging in order not to die from starvation? In other words, the Eved himself has to ask his own questions and do his own cheshbon nefesh, why he came to this, for why did Hashem put him in a situation of financial collapse. But the Torah wants to mechadish a more profound question. That question is addressed to the master who bought the slave. What did you do to deserve that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to set it up for you, right in front of you, on your plate, the opportunity of doing tzedakah and chesed? You've got to support the son of the Eved. And why is that? Banav mimachron, because you have to be inspired with rachmanus. You have to fulfill the mitzvah of gemilas chasadim, and it's got to be done in the best way possible. And that is to support the son of the Eved. And that's why Reb Shimon emphasizes the concept of being sold, not going in, as we saw in Reb Yitzchak and Mishpatim, but being sold. Sold means he was sold against his will because of his financial collapse. I don't mean against his will literally, because he did agree to sell himself, but I mean figuratively. And we begin to understand why the Torah teaches the obligation of supporting the wife of the slave in the psukim and mishpatim that address themselves to the thief who is freed after 6 years of his work. That six-year period symbolizes the fact that he used his servitude for his own benefit to right his wrongs, to understand what he's been doing so terribly, to be sensitive to the needs of his wife, to learn to appreciate the value of hard work. Parshas Bahar, the Kiyomo Chachicha, who collapses, that's where it's appropriate for the halacha to address the master, tell him the kinds of treatment he has to give to the Eved, tell the master that he must feed the children of the Eved. These are all opportunities given to the owner, to the master, to the rich person, to achieve chesed and tzedakah. And now it makes sense that the psukim discuss the yitzia l'cheres b'yovel, that the slave might be freed prematurely before the end of the 6 years because of the yovel. And in this context of yovel, the master, the adon, must free his eved at that point. Not again because the Eved has completed his term of work and he's learned the lesson of how to respect the value and appreciate the value of hard work, but rather to internalize the concept that Hashem is the ultimate ruler over his possessions. The parasha of Yovel is really addressing itself to the master, to the Adon. Teach him and let him learn that ultimately who rules over his possessions. He's a big shot. He thinks, Kochi v'yotziv yodi is my money. No! Ki li kol aretz, says the Torah in Yovel. We begin to understand why Rashi, in his Pasuk in Bahar, quotes from Shimon, and he mentions him by name to point out that this is a very important statement of Reb Shimon. It's different than the statement that we want to use. Rashi wants to use to interpret the pasuk in Mishpatim to emphasize the difference between them. He quotes Reb Shimon in Parshas Behar, as in Parshas Mishpatim, he quotes the Mechilta and the statement attributed to Rabbi Yitzchak. Why the split? The answer is because there's such a fundamental difference between these two parashas. And each parasha, Rabbosai, has a very important message for us that should increase our appreciation of the beauty of the Torah, the magnitude, the depth of the Torah, the sensitivity of the Torah. One parasha, Bahar, to teach us how the Torah is so concerned about giving the slave the opportunity, the framework, to get back on his two feet, to address the master and tell him, this is why you're rich. You know, the Torah put you in this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put you in this particular set of circumstances. Now you got to rise to the occasion and fulfill your mitzvahs of chesed and stuck in the best possible way. In the way you treat the Evan, in the way you support his children who are not guilty in any way. And then, in addition to this message of the beauty and the compassion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, creating not punishments for the sake of punishments, but a framework for rehabilitation, if you will. Now we have to learn the message of Parshas Mishpatim, again in the Parsha of Avodim, that Avodim seems so alien to us, but the message is profound. And that is, this slave who became a criminal has to now get back into a situation where he understands and he appreciates the value, the ethic of work. After the 6 years, he's going to enter into the job market, find employment, support himself and his wife, bechavod, with great dignity. These are the central ideas, I believe, in the Parsha of Avodim, that we can take for ourselves and give us an appreciation, a little bit of a taste of the Torah. Tamu Re'u, how beautiful the Torah is, how deep and profound and endless it is. Hopefully we can appreciate the Torah, and this is something that will prepare us for Kabbalah Satorah with enthusiasm and zeal on Chag HaShavuos Habo Aleinu L'Tova Amen.